Welcome to Be All You Are, a midlife awakening podcast. I'm your host, Kaina Paranjape. I'm a former corporate executive, two-time entrepreneur, and mama. I've worked with and partnered with major brands and even helped a celebrity launch an award-winning business. But I also believe that who we are is not just reflected on our LinkedIn profile. When I was 30, my husband became suddenly critically ill. And after 8 years of living with a difficult illness, he passed away. This experience taught me that we need to claim our dreams now, embrace all we are, and create an amazing life along the way. Today, I help women like you navigate through change and transition to their next level of freedom and fulfillment, whatever that looks like for you. This podcast is all about stepping into all you are. It's about reconnecting to your inner voice so you can hear the whispers of your deepest dreams and cultivate the courage and a plan to create the life that is waiting for you. Now head out on that solo walk or settle into a cozy spot with a favorite beverage and join me. Hello, beautiful women. Welcome back to another episode of Be All You Are, a Midlife Awakening podcast. I am so, so glad you're here. Today, we are going to be diving into an interview with a guest that I'm super excited about. I actually held this interview several months ago, and I'm going to tell you a quick story just purely for entertainment, and then we're going to dive into this interview. But basically, I had been trying to land this guest for a while, and she had agreed, but you know, she's busy. And so I was going back and forth with her publicist or her assistant and trying to coordinate it, and finally got the date on the calendar, had a beautiful conversation with her. And maybe minutes later, my daughter came in the room. And while the interview was loading into the platform that I use for this podcast, to record this podcast, she said, "Mama, can I do something on my computer?" And I guess I just like wasn't thinking about what was happening. And so I said, "Sure, you need to do a new tab." And then she said, "Click here." And she closed the tab down where the episode was loading. And when I went to open it back up, it was not there. And I basically had to go from that straight to a dinner. I ended up being like 15 minutes late for that dinner, but I had to leave immediately. So I didn't have time to like troubleshoot and figure it out. And all through the dinner, I kept thinking, oh my gosh, like the most high profile interview that I've had on the podcast to date. And, you know, the first of many. This is sort of like this interview kind of came very naturally. And I'll explain that as well. But like, you know, to me, it was like kicking off something, a new stage for the podcast, and then I couldn't find it. Anyway, long story short, it was recovered. And so thank goodness for that. Otherwise, I would not be bringing this interview to you. But I wanted to share that story because life happens, right? And even when you have bigger plans, sometimes things can get in the way. Luckily, in this case, it was recoverable. So I wanted to share that. Before I introduce the guest, our guest, and tell you more about her, I want to remind you that next week we are kicking off Take Up Space, which is a 3-day immersive experience all about owning your voice, trusting yourself, and reclaiming your authentic power. You know, we are in a time in the world where there's so much uncertainty, there's so much fear, and you know, I would say that that is true at any point in time in the world, but it ebbs and flows. And it seems like it's kind of at a heightened experience right now, for sure. And I think it's so important for us as women to realize that this is an opportunity for us to bring forward our knowing, our wisdom, our way of being to the world for ourselves first and foremost, because then we can feel safe within ourselves, but also to our communities, to our families, to the world. And I feel that We have so underestimated ourselves. We have so underestimated the power that we have. And I'm not just talking again about, glass ceilings and getting CEO titles, which by all means, we should go for that. And if that's something that you want, 100%. But this is an inside job, right? This is an inside job that will manifest externally in a more authentic way if we do the internal work. So that's what Take Up Space is all about. It's about not shrinking. It's about not second guessing ourselves. It's about not waiting for permission from others to be, to do, to speak. It's about tapping into our own inner authority of moving from a place of knowing and a place of trust. And so just to remind you, we start on Tuesday, April 29th. It's just 3 days. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 12 to 1 on Zoom. And then I'm opening up a messaging app. So I think we're going to be in Voxer and we'll be in there so we can have conversations about what we talked about. We can like share thoughts. We can ask questions. We can be in community with other women who are wanting to explore this power that we all hold that we want to amplify as a collective, right? So yes, we do the work individually in our lives, but when we come together and talk about it and reflect that back to one another, then we amplify it. And that's my intention for this experience, right? And just to give you a sense on the 3 days, the first day, we're going to talk about reclaiming your power, meaning it's not as if you have to attain that power from outside of you. It's already within you. So how do we awaken to the truth of who you really are, right? Remembering who you really are, remembering the gifts that we have been given as women that we can leverage and we can harness, especially now. On the second day, we're going to talk about embodying your power. So, all right, you've tapped into it, but how do you move throughout your days and your life in your power, right? That it means like leading yourself with a sense of clarity, with a sense of confidence and courage, even when we hit upon times where it's challenging, right? And it's difficult. But if we can always feel grounded that I know I've got me, right? I know I've got me, even if I've got me means I need to go talk to a therapist or a friend. It's not about not getting support, but it's about this sense of feeling like you've got your 2 feet on the ground or that you know how to get back to that. So that's what we're going to be doing with embodying your power. And then on the third day, it's sustaining your power. So how do you continue to deepen trust in your feminine strength, in your intuition, and in your wisdom, right? How do we do that? And on the third day, we will explore how do we sustain that power? How do we walk forward on our path, deepening our sense of trust in our feminine strength, in our intuition, and in our wisdom? So how do we bring in the practices and the habits that keep us on that path and don't allow us to veer off into, the wild, messy world, but to stay tuned in to our knowing. So this is the journey that we are going to be going on. And I called this an experience and not a workshop because my intention for this experience is to activate something within you. I want you to leave these 3 days together. First of all, feeling like you're not alone, that you are walking this path with other women who feel exactly the same way you do, but who are committed to becoming more powerful in the world. And I want you to leave feeling more clear, confident, and ready to step into your next chapter with a sense of trust. And leading yourself with a greater sense of conviction. So as I mentioned, it's three live sessions from 12 to 1. We're going to be doing sort of interactive coaching and reflection on the calls. I'm going to share practical tools to help you shift into your power, to help you remember who you really are. The replays will be available, and we'll do live Voxer mentoring throughout the 3 days as well. So come join us for Take Up Space starting next Tuesday. Link to join is in the show notes. You can also just go to allyouare.ca/take-up-space. And I will see you on Tuesday. There's already a whole bunch of women who have signed up and who are ready to begin with us. And I hope that you will be one of them. All right. I'm super pumped to introduce to you my guest for today. and again, I love the way this came about. So let me just share that my guest today is award-winning host Melissa Grello, who is also the host of an incredible podcast called Aging Powerfully. And I have known Melissa for several years, actually back when I had a business called Bricka that I co-founded. Melissa had a kids clothing line, a gender neutral kids clothing line, and we collaborated on many occasions with her clothing line. We carried it in our stores. We did pop-ups, and it was like wonderful to get to know her and, you know, one of her many side projects. And she's such a multi-passionate person, and but it had been years. It had been years, so many years since she and I had connected. And just recently, last year, I was on a panel at an event here in Toronto, and she was the host. She was the host and the MC for this event. And so she and I reconnected, and I mentioned to her then that I had a podcast that I thought she would just be such an amazing guest for, and she agreed. And it took about maybe 6-7 months before we landed on a time for the call, but we did. And so I'm excited for you to hear from Melissa Grello. I joke with her that she is the expert interviewer. She has interviewed like literally thousands of people, the biggest names that you could imagine. She's, you know, national, been on national TV. I'm going to read a little bit of her bio now, but it was fun to turn the tables and have the chance to sit down with Melissa and ask her all the questions that I know. If you already know her, you're going to be like, oh, how fun. I get to tune into this conversation. And if you don't, either way, Melissa is a extremely powerful force. And she is very true to herself. And I really honor and respect and love that about her. So let me tell you a little bit more about Melissa Grello. She recently launched a podcast called Aging Powerfully, where she interviews experts who provide evidence-based insights in healthy living for women of all ages. Although I would say that, you know, her focus is on women who are entering perimenopause and beyond. So from menopause to nutrition, fitness to heart health to sex, stress, and longevity, Melissa's podcast covers it all, and she is very intentional about the experts that she brings on. So you know that you are getting cutting edge information when you listen to her podcast. Melissa actually started out as a teacher and then became a journalist and television host, and she has led flagship shows on Canada's number one network, CTV, and CP24 in Toronto. She reported on Toronto's biggest breaking news stories and was the first co-host of CP24 Breakfast. And she made her national debut co-hosting CTV's Olympic Morning from Whistler, BC. She is also the co-host of The Social, Canada's number one daytime talk show, and former contributor on CTV's Your Morning. I am so excited for you to dive in. Tune in to this conversation with Melissa Grello. Welcome, Melissa, to the podcast. I'm so happy to have you.
I'm so excited to be here. It's great to see you.
It's so good to see you too. So most people, Melissa, would know you from, I don't know, co-hosting a show on TV for 10 something years?
Yeah, 12 seasons now. Yes.
12 seasons.
How? I don't know. Yeah, The Social's been on air for 12 seasons and it's just gone by like that.
Oh my gosh, it's so incredible. You know, the reason why I felt called to reach out to you and to invite you on the podcast is because of something new that you've launched that's more recent. And that is a podcast dedicated to educating women about perimenopause and menopause and the whole journey. And the podcast is called Aging Powerfully, which is so perfect for how we want to be looking at this stage of our life. And, you know, we say that as if it's like, well, of course we want to look at the stage of our life like that, but this is new, right? This is new that we are the generation that has that choice. And for a lot of women, they didn't. But like, even for us, right? Even for us, and I want to talk to you about your own personal journey. But for me, I thought of menopause as something that just happens to you later. And maybe you are affected, maybe not. I do recall my mom when I was a teenager, like times where I was like, ooh, avoid mom. Avoid mom. I know there's something going on there, right? That I don't quite understand. And so I remember that. But 2 years ago, it was around this time, 2 years ago, I started having all these crazy symptoms. And I was like, what is this?
Yeah, I get it. I think that's how a lot of our stories start, which is we wake up one day and we just have no idea whose body we're in and who stole our brains. And I think that that certainly is my story. It's a lot of our stories for people who are going to go through this transition, which PS is every single one of us.
Yeah.
Is going to go through this transition. And for some, it's sooner. For some, it's surgically induced, you know, so we're all going to go through this. Nobody's getting out of this.
Yes.
And I think this is the generation, Gen X, that simply is not going to go through this the way any other generation did before us, because we simply do not want to suffer like our mothers, grandmothers, aunts, anyone before us who had little to no information and it was stigmatized and quite frankly, embarrassing. Mm-hmm. And that is just not going to be our journey. And I think that's why I started this journey and certainly why I started Aging Powerfully with Melissa Grello.
Yes. And I want to hear more about that, because I think for me, you know, the fact that it was such a shock, even that was like, that bothered me. I was like, why is this a shock to me? Why didn't nobody tell me? Like, why did I not know this? And I would ask my friends, hey, are you having this issue? Are you? And it slowly started to come out that everybody was facing some strange symptoms, or, you know, suddenly getting frozen shoulder or whatever it may be. And we were all sort of discovering it in the moment. And I feel like we're the last generation who's going to come into this not knowing what's coming.
You're so right. I have a 10-year-old daughter and she could give you a TED talk on menopause, right? Like, this is the beauty and quite frankly, the superpower that women have being together. And we share information, and we certainly share information like this because we're all going through it. No two women are going to go through this menopause transition the exact same way. But we all know that something's up when things start to change. And I do think that part of this journey, certainly of mine and the podcast, is to finally reduce, or let's try to even completely remove, the shame in all of this. I think the reason why there's such a gap in education and knowledge is at the very basic, patriarchy.
Yeah.
And I don't say that as like men are trying to do this to women. What I say broadly is that women's health in general is something that's always been looked at as sort of over there.
Yeah.
It's not something that's always been taken seriously. It's not something that gets funding. It's not something that gets attention. And what I mean by patriarchy is our culture is very comfortable with women suffering.
Yeah.
We're very comfortable with women being in pain. It's almost as if by the very virtue of being born a woman or identifying as a woman, your journey automatically has pain involved with it. Mm-hmm. It could start with the fact that you start to have menstrual cramps when you go through puberty. It could start to be just the angst that we feel as teenage girls. Oh, that's just dismissed. Then there's things called pregnancy and labor pains and, you know, birthing itself.
Postpartum, yes. You know,
postpartum. Yes. And like, this is kind of like, we accept that women just have pain as part of our journey as women. So I think that if you follow that line and then you throw on ageism on top of that, which is what also is behind, I think, so much of the silence behind
and
menopause.
It applies so much more strongly to women, right?
Exactly. I mean, simply the same ageism just doesn't exist to men. So I think if you combine the fact that, well, women are just expected to be in pain, and then you add the fact that, well, at that stage of their lives, who even cares about them anyway? You can see how this convergence of events that started at the beginning of our life has actually just followed us to the end of our reproductive life. And I say this in air quotes because that's when culture says we're kind of done.
Yeah.
So who really cares anyway?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like, oh, you have a dry vagina and sex hurts for you? Well, who cares?
Yeah.
Why are you even still having sex? I mean, so you can understand how all of these things come together mm-hmm. at a time when, quite frankly, I can at least speak for myself, I'm actually feeling the opposite.
Exactly.
And I don't know if that's just a function of standing on the shoulders of all the generations of women who have actually suffered before us with no information. But this generation, we are just getting started at midlife. And, you know, and I'd like to think that that's the way we are approaching aging because we're not done. So if we're not done and I still want to have great sex or I still want to have great skin or I still want to have control over my health and sleep well and not sweat. And, you know, I mean, just all the things, you know, we know there's dozens of symptoms that come along yeah. with perimenopause and menopause. Then I think you have a convergence of events that is changing the discussion today. And I'm trying to play a small part in sort of smashing the thoughts that we have. When you say menopause, like, I think of the Golden Girls. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm looking at this screen and I don't see the Golden Girl. Do you know what
I mean?
You
know what's hilarious, Melissa, is that I started dating somebody like 2.5 years ago. So actually, let's say 2 and a few months ago. And literally a few months into our relationship, I started having these symptoms. And I literally sat him down on my couch and I was like, if he can't handle this, you know what? We're not going to keep going. He needs to be able to sit there and hear the words. And for the last 2 years, he probably knows as much as your daughter.
Good. That's fantastic to hear. It's the way it should be.
Yes. I was like, okay, he's a keeper. He's sticking around. He's like in it. He's like in it with me. Okay.
Perfect. That's great news.
But I would love to hear, Melissa, your own personal journey. So how did it sort of like creep up on you? And I know a little bit about this from hearing your some of your podcast interviews where you've shared, but I would love our listeners to hear how it manifested for you.
Yeah, it's probably, again, even though it's my own journey, I think a lot of women will hear potentially some parallels to their own lives and journey through perimenopause. For me, it started just in my early 40s. Mm-hmm. And I'm 47 now. And so in my early 40s, it actually started with a flare up of initially anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I had had anxiety challenges in my university years, in my 20s. I sought therapy for it. I actually have a degree in psychology. And I just actually went to my profs and said, you know, I'm having some challenges here. And, you know, what I thought at the time was really funny stuff, which I didn't identify as anxiety and I didn't identify as anxiety attacks. That just something was happening with me that I felt very out of control. Yeah. I developed a flying phobia, a pretty intense one. And again, it's, you know, I really liked to travel, but I was like, that's so bizarre. Not identifying that I was having panic attacks while flying. So anyway, all of that to say is, you know, and I'll come back to why I'm referring to my 20s again, but fast forward to my early 40s, I then did recognize, oh, okay, I think this is maybe anxiety again. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how it started. And then on top of that, I started to experience heart palpitations, which I actually attributed to my anxiety. I actually thought, part of my anxiety response was not only this feeling like I was going to pass out or that the blood was getting pulled out from my entire body through my feet, mm-hmm. where I would almost feel like I was going to faint. There was also heavy breathing. So I thought I was losing my breath. So all of these things together, I just kind of lumped together at the time as anxiety.
Right.
But once I was able to slowly manage my anxiety better, and that was through a combination of therapy again, through heavy meditation, and I started to go back to what really worked well for me in my 20s. Mm-hmm. But the heart palpitations didn't subside mm-hmm. and in fact got worse. So for example, I'd be sitting at a morning meeting and my heart would race so fast and I would look down at my Apple Watch and it would look like my heart rate was like I was doing cardio in the gym. And I just thought, whoa. And that really spooked me. Like, you know, you start to think, am I having a heart attack?
Yeah.
So, you know, I went to my doctor and she's like, listen, we're, you know, you're very, very healthy, but let's send you off to a cardiologist. And so did the whole thing. And anybody who's experienced a cardiologist appointment, they're going to, you know, go through your whole health history. I ended up wearing a Holter monitor, which, you know, you track your heart rate over many, mm-hmm. many days and mm-hmm. they can take a look. At the end of the day, everything is healthy. Yes, they did see these palpitations, but they couldn't find any underlying pathology behind it, which means, well, okay, this is happening, but we don't understand why, but nothing to worry about. So on the one hand, great. And then on the other hand, not great. And I couldn't figure out how to handle my heart palpitations. Mm-hmm. So I'm suffering through this really bizarre feeling.
Yeah.
And in this time, I also started to experience extremely, extremely achy joints. Like I work out a lot. I love fitness, but I would wake up in the morning and it felt like I was waking up in a 95-year-old's body. And that for me was very startling. And I just thought, whoa, you know, like I'd have to almost get up and it would take me a minute and I can jump out of bed, no problem. So, you know, I'm kind of just going, is this just aging?
Yeah.
And so this is like over now several years, like things are happening where okay, maybe I got to change my diet. Maybe am I not sleeping enough? Maybe I got to do more yoga. Like mm-hmm. maybe I'm just like, I don't know, I'm getting tense. I don't know. So you're kind of, you're just shooting stuff at the wall. I'm talking to my doctor and she's a great doctor, but no time in this journey was the word perimenopause or menopause discussed, even though age-wise at this time now, like now let's put us into the pandemic,
yeah,
which is now, you know, 4.5 years ago. So I've been dealing with this, you know, 4 or 5 years. And as many people experience the pandemic, because everything stopped, there was this hyper-focus, at least for me, on my health, mental health, body health. And it just felt like it was all going sideways. I think we all remember those feelings.
Yeah.
So, but it also did allow me the opportunity to start to go, I need to look into this more. Mm-hmm. And that's where social media, it can be great. It can be terrible.
Yeah.
And that is where I started to find a little bit more, you know, people talk, a few people talking about this thing called perimenopause. And then as soon as I started to look into it, I called my doctor and I was like, we need to talk menopause.
Yeah.
And so lo and behold, as we started in this journey, that's where it's like, that's exactly where I am. So that's kind of how it all started and evolved over many years. And here I am today, still talking about it.
I know. Well, that's what I would love to know is like, you know, that the journey that you went on and then that moment where you were like, and you suddenly could identify it. It's so empowering in that moment to understand. I mean, it's just the beginning of another journey really, but at least, you know, you feel like, oh, there's not something deathly wrong with me. Because I think, you know, I'm sure you went through that too. Like, oh no, is there something wrong? Right. And the truth is that it is actually a natural process and we all deal with it, or, you know, we all have symptoms that are different. So it's annoying in that way because you can't ask your friend who's the same age and have them say, yes, I'm feeling exactly what you're feeling, right? So what though led you to, you know, starting the podcast? Like what led you to feeling so passionate about this topic that you were like, create a podcast just to talk about this?
I think it was both self-serving and in being self-serving, because I was trying to find so much information, I knew that it would ultimately help at least somebody else out there. And, you know, to back up my story, I think part of the reason why I think that people who are legislators, people who are managing healthcare systems in our provinces and territories, there are so many reasons why they need to step up when it comes to not only funding women's health, but in particular, really starting to bolster the conversation around menopause. Mm-hmm. You know, in my case, that notion of what you had said, which is something's really wrong, my health anxiety, which is something a lot of women don't talk about, but probably a lot of us have mm-hmm. or have had, this idea of catastrophic thinking, which, by the way, is potentially a perimenopausal symptom. Yep. You add that kind of thinking with a bunch of type A women, and what you might actually get is something that the government doesn't want. And that is a misuse of very scarce resources. Mm-hmm. I'm really lucky that I'm a person who has a family doctor, and she's a great doctor, and she listens, and she does all the right tests, and she asks all the right questions. Mm-hmm. But in my search for looking like, do I have a terminal disease? I actually ended up really heavily going to a lot of diagnostics and imaging and all of these things, some of them warranted, a lot of them not.
Yes.
So now you have this healthcare system that is in crisis, and you have women who are going through the menopause transition, which is normal and natural, all of us thinking we're dying.
Yes.
And so you're looking for an answer. That is a huge strain on this medical system from people who really do need it. Now, I'm not saying we don't need the help. And I do want to kind of put the caveat to this, that not everything that you're feeling at this age is going to necessarily be menopause.
That's
a
right.
lot of it could be.
Yep.
And a lot of it is really, it's warranted to mm-hmm. do further exploration, but you and your doctor would know that. But in my case, the podcast came from this journey that I was on where I thought, we got to fill this gap of education, because this lack of education is actually getting really expensive.
Yeah.
It's getting really expensive. There's an economic impact to lack of education.
Yeah.
So there was a piece for me here where I thought, there's a lot of information out there. A lot of us became podcast consumers over the pandemic. I certainly did. I was looking at my catalog going, a lot of males. And a lot of Americans. Mm-hmm. And I was really searching for information from women who understand what we're going through, yes. also Canadians.
Yeah.
And man, it just didn't exist in the way that I expected it to. And so I said, well, maybe I got to create the thing that I'm looking for.
That's how every great idea starts, right?
Right. Kind of do it.
Yes.
And so I kind of thought, you know, they're very early on, I also recognized the dangers in going just to American experts. I also recognized the dangers of going to people who are in a very different medical system than our system. When you have sort of a for-profit care system that exists in the States, it's not apples to apples to our, you know, again, I'm going to use heavy air quotes, universal healthcare system mm-hmm. here. The way that we administer healthcare and the way we look at it, it's very different. The systems are very different. So I just really wanted help to figure out, how do I navigate this thing, not only menopause, but just as a woman in midlife?
Yes.
And how do we do that through the Canadian system, of which there are multiple systems, province by province, territory by territory? And so I was very lucky, and this is, you know, my day job affords me access to really phenomenal minds.
Yes.
And by talking to a few people and talking to a few more people, I realized not only are there phenomenal Canadian experts who are doing the work here,
yes.
but they need to get their work out to yes. Canadian women like me. And what I know I can do is be a bridge to get their medical information out, communicate it in a way that someone like me can understand to women who are like me. And then the podcast was born.
It's beautiful. And honestly, you are doing that. Like, so many women tune into your podcast, and I've had so many conversations with women about information that we've learned on your podcast, and we're constantly sending them back and forth to each other. So I really thank you for that. I do want to dive a little bit more. You just kind of alluded into your day job and what you do for a living, and you've spent decades in media and TV and podcasting now. And I wanted to ask you, did you always know that this is what you wanted to do? Was this something that, like, as a little girl, you'd sort of dreamed of it? Or was it something that was, that you were just sort of led to? I would love to hear that story.
No, I did not know that I would ever end up here, nor did I have dreams of this ever, to be honest. I was born and raised on a horse farm in Caledon, like rural Ontario. It's not as rural now, but it certainly was back then when I was growing up. And so, you know, my perspective and my exposure to things was limited in a way growing up, where it wasn't like I was living in an urban center where you could see there were so many possibilities for education or different lines of work. Growing up, I have my mother, who is phenomenal, and she worked for the government almost from the day that she came here from the Philippines. And it was always just drilled into me, education, 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 and get a really good government job for stability and a pension. And that's your life, right? Like, that's the immigrant dream.
Yes.
Right. And so my father, he had immigrated to Canada from Portugal, and he was an entrepreneur, and he had this wild dream of having a horse farm and importing horses from Portugal and training them and doing that, which, you know, when I think about it and I say it loud, sounds so wacky, but he's done it, and he's almost 50 years in business and has done very well following his dreams. And so you get these two people together and
talk about mixed messages.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, I didn't know which way was up at that point. But, you know, bottom line is that, you know, the saying that my father has is the son of a fish must learn how to swim. And that basically means he's a horse person. He's an entrepreneur. We have a horse business. And so the kids are going to get into the business, right? That's what that saying means. So my sister and I were born and raised working on a horse farm, going to school, and that was kind of our life. And when I thought about what did I want to be when I grow up, I got little glimpses of things that excited me. My mother worked in the city, and anytime we would have a PA day, there was no childcare, so she would drag us to work, and she worked in downtown Toronto. And that was our kind of one, oh, wow, we take transit and a subway and bright city lights. So what I will say is when I look back on my childhood, I always had this thing of I've got to get into the city because that's where the action is, right? And of course, being a country kid, it's, you know, many country kids would be like, oh, that's so exciting. So I say that only because I figured going through school, I was always very good in school. I'm always straight A's, you know, valedictorian, all the things, went to school. And I kind of stumbled into teaching. And I say that because I was a riding coach at our horse farm. I think I started my first coaching when I was 12 years old. Teaching actually became very, very second nature to me. So it kind of was the trajectory that I thought, okay, I'm really good at teaching. I'm really great with kids. It kind of was a natural progression to go to university. And I did my Bachelor of Education and was qualified to teach grades 7 to the end of high school. I did my B.Ed. And I got my Bachelor of Arts in Psychology, minoring in French. I'm fully bilingual because I went through the French immersion program. So I kind of was like, that's my life. And so started teaching at a university, and was probably burned, a combination of burnout from university and then burnout in the first couple of years as a teacher. It's one of the hardest jobs in the world. And I loved it, but also I was really exhausted. And I also knew I wanted to go back to school to do more education. So I only taught for a little while and then went back to university to do my master's in education. And I think that's where life really began for me, because I was kind of living a passive life at that point. And then call it quarter life crisis, call it, who knows, reality hitting you in the face. But I quit my master's program. I didn't know if I was going to go back to teaching, dump the lame boyfriend, you know, moved out of my house and moved in with my girlfriends in downtown Toronto, and kind of had this like crisis of existence.
Yeah. An awakening. You had an awakening.
I guess so. It didn't feel like it at the time when my mom stopped talking to me. She's like, you cannot quit university. Do you know how lucky you are?
Oh my gosh, you are setting us up perfectly for the next thing I want to ask you about, but let's finish the rest of this first.
Yeah. So at the time I was like, I need some help through this. And my mom's best friend, who was really high up in business in Toronto, and she says, listen, I have a business coach. You know, you might want to talk to him. He's helped me through a lot of sort of business related stuff. Let's go talk. So she introduced me to him. And in the end, he was actually a psychologist, but he was working on Bay Street with a lot of like corporate types. And I was like, I don't think this is the right guy for me. Well, it turns out he was the right person for me. And through working with him through this quarter life crisis, on the other end of things, he really helped me to see that journalism was actually something that really excited me. And I just didn't ever look at it as a career option.
Yeah.
And, you know, through working with him and realizing that I was a news junkie, I loved information. Your skill set as a teacher, shockingly, is not that different than a broadcaster or a journalist in many ways. We love to read. We love to research.
Communicating. Yes.
Yeah, all of it. It's actually pretty transferable. And then I said, you know what? I was lucky to know somebody in the business. And I spent a few weeks actually in Montreal at what was then called CFCF. It was a CTV Montreal affiliate. I think it's called CTV Montreal now. And I knew the news director there. And I said, let me just go spend some time in a newsroom and figure out if this is what I like. Day one, I was hooked. And I said, this is it. And the rest is history, as they say. And that was probably well over 20 years ago, maybe 22 years ago.
Wow. Okay. So there's like two threads that I want to pull from this. I'm trying to decide which one to go first. Okay. So the first thread that I want to pull is you alluded to the fact that, but well, it's a fact that both of your parents are immigrants, right? So you're first generation Canadian, as am I. And I have had so many conversations with women who are first generation Canadian who feel this pressure, right? To like not only live up to their parents' expectations, but to honor their parents by stepping into what their parents want for them. And then there comes a point, like similar to what happened to you, but sometimes it's not until their 30s or 40s that women are like, wait, I did this. I followed this path. I was good at it. I'm good at it. I have a great career. I have a good reputation, but this actually isn't what I want, right? And now I'm afraid because, you know, I've spent all these years building this career, but also because I don't want to let my parents down. And so this is something that I help women with. And I'm curious for you, how do you think about that?
That's many hours of therapy right there. Seriously. Many hours of therapy. You know, I actually did a TED Talk on this exact issue because I was so passionate about it. Yeah. And, you know, ultimately the crux of that talk was we are the fruits of our parents' labor, mm-hmm. you know, and the pressure of that and the expectations that are not only placed, I think we got a lot of things happening here, not only as a first generation Canadian, but as girls.
Yeah.
I'm a firstborn also. So, you know, let's add birth order to that. So you have a lot of layers of that. And going back to my original discussion about, well, we just expect women to suffer. No one really thinks about us, how we feel, what we're going through physically, mentally. And I'm not saying this to blame my parents, but that's just kind of how culture works. Mm-hmm. And certainly immigrant culture, mm-hmm. You hear the stories of how much your parents have sacrificed and how hard they worked and everything they left behind, that you having a bad day or not finding your calling, mm-hmm. it feels very minuscule compared to the real things that they've had to deal with. So you do get quiet and you just do the work and you give them, you know, the output is what it is, which is usually doing very well in school and pursuing a good, solid, noble career and all mm-hmm. of those things. Now, I'm very lucky, I think, in there that there's a thread. And the thread is, while my mother herself was a good girl, and I don't always use that word in a nice way, but you know what I mean by that. She's the good girl. She's the good daughter. She did it all. There is also a thread that lives in my mother that had big dreams. She's the one who left the country. Yes, she was the firstborn girl.
Yes.
So there is something in her also that speaks to me, which is she gets this thing about ambition. She mm-hmm. gets something about me when it comes to forging your own path, feeling the fear and doing it anyway. Like there is something in her deeply, even though she's being such a good daughter, mm-hmm. but it's actually also my dad who the entrepreneurial spirit, anybody who's started a business mm-hmm. or started anything new on their own, has that, there's a bit of a rebel in you. There's a little bit of like, you got to follow your own path. You cannot follow what your parents wanted for you. So in both of my parents, I think I was able and lucky to show them that I am able to excel in all the things they expected me to excel in. But if I wasn't actually fulfilled, they understood that part.
Yeah.
And the idea that they might have done all that they did for us, but also they did that so that we would have the option of choice.
Yes.
And I don't think they had choice.
That's right.
Quite the same way that we had choice, right? So the opportunity of Canada, the idea of Canada to them was, yes, there should be opportunity for my children to excel. But at the end of the day, and certainly when I was in my mid-20s, I had enough respect from my parents that they respected my decision when I said, I'm not happy.
Yeah.
And therein lies the difference. And I don't know that every kid is lucky to have that, but I was lucky. My sister was lucky to have parents that ultimately said, well, you know what? If you're not happy, then it doesn't really matter. So you got to go find your way. But I also think that they knew, especially as my, you know, me as a firstborn and as a girl, I think they also knew she's going to succeed at whatever she puts her head to. Like, she's a stubborn girl and she will get what she wants.
That's right.
It worked out.
Yeah. I mean, clearly it did. But, you know, I always say to women too that, and you really said it so beautifully, right? Like they didn't have the choices and we now have the choices. And also it's this sort of feeling that we take the gifts that they gave us, right? And then how do we leverage those gifts? It's not just by doing exactly what they did, but it's like going further with them, right? And the same for our children and for our girls, right? Like we want them to take what we give them and go further. Like they're going to know so much more. They're going to be so much more self-aware growing up than we even were. And so I think it's like this idea that we don't just pass down what we have, we pass down what we have and then some, and then more awareness, more opportunity, more growth, you know?
More badassery.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Okay, so there was another thread that I wanted to pull on there. And that was that you described this moment where you quit everything, right? Where you were like, I'm going to do my master's and that's like a next right step for me, right? Like again, along that path that's sort of been laid out. And then you were like, no, this isn't it. And I don't know what it is, but all I know, this isn't it. And I'm just quitting, right? And it's a scary moment because you're in the unknown, right? You're in this, the void. You just like, don't know what's coming out of there, if anything, right? It's very scary. But if you hadn't done that, you wouldn't have been led to this, you know, connection to this coach who helped you see all of these things. And I think that that's sort of what allowed you in that in your 20s to connect to your inner voice, right? And a lot of what I talk about on this show is how as women at this stage of life, we have become very disconnected from our inner voice because we have been trying to be good girls and trying to do what is expected of us in all the ways. And when we connect to our inner voice, it's so clear, right? It's so clear what we need to do. And I wanted to ask you, so because that was several decades ago, how do you now connect to your inner voice? Was that sort of the beginning of you starting to realize like, well, I have the answers within me. I just need to tap.
That's a long journey. As women, we have to undo so much conditioning in our lives. I think, you know, not to tie it back to menopause, but maybe I think menopause is this beautiful time in life when we actually go back to our true essence as young girls.
I do too.
Before the world had its way with us and telling us how we were supposed to be and what we were supposed to do and how we're supposed to look and what we're supposed to care about and all of these things. And so, you know, I think certainly that my 20s definitely, you know, I've always had a strong inner voice, but your sense of duty and obligation, you know, I don't think those are necessarily bad things, to be honest.
Yeah.
But they won't always serve you forever. And so I think for me, it was certainly my mid-20s when a lot changed and I did get off of the prescribed track and decided to get into my own train and go my own direction. But I will have to say, God, I wish that I had something really profound to say that I was listening to my inner voice all the way through past that 25, 26 year mark. But I really don't feel like I've ever come into my own until my 40s.
Yeah.
When you really understand, like I've always listened to my inner voice, but I was still really, really good at playing the part, being the good girl, making sure everyone around me was comfortable, still getting what I wanted, but doing it nicely with a smile and not offending anybody, but still getting what I wanted. Because like, you can't be ambitious. You can be ambitious, but you can't be too ambitious.
That's right.
You can't show your ambition. So like, be ambitious, but be really nice about it. Like, listen, it's exhausting. And all the women listening know what I'm talking about, right? It's this weird dance that we're always doing. Mm-hmm. To be nice, to be perceived as nice and likable. And it's not to say that we're not nice people. It's just that there's so much of a persona and we hide so much of what's actually going on. And that's exhausting, right? That inauthenticity is exhausting. And I don't think I was able to sort of bring together the Melissa that was always behind guiding me, and then the Melissa I put forth to the world, have those be the same person.
Yeah.
Until my 40s. Mm. And I will add that for me, this is not going to be for everybody, but motherhood for me put a whole new spin on things, and perhaps becoming the mother to a daughter put a whole new spin on things, because now you are going back to that primal child, that girl that you used to be. Because what? Parenting is like reliving your own youth, absolutely, your own childhood. And as the mother of a girl, knowing, oh, this world, I know what's coming for her and I need to prepare her.
Yeah.
And you have to get back in touch with that kid, mm-hmm, before the world wiped away your essence. Mm-hmm. I had to kind of dig back into that to kind of say, okay, what kind of mother do I want to be? And you can't, I can't fake confidence and I can't fake great self-esteem. It's like your kids see through all your bullshit.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Right.
Right.
So you're kind of almost tapping into that again as you're trying to teach and lead and model this for your own children. So there's a superpower for me that came with becoming the mother to a daughter. And I think I've only gotten stronger since then. My daughter's 10 now. And so the inner voice now is, it's not difficult for me to speak my mind. It's like, say what you mean and mean what you say. Like, this is something so simple that women, we have this conditioned out of us very young.
Yeah.
And I've only come back to this in my 40s, if I'm really honest.
Yeah, I that's so beautiful, Melissa. And, you know, I have a daughter too, who is 8 years old. She just turned 8. And I feel that so deeply because in her presence, I remember what it was like to be her age. Like, it doesn't, you know, up until now, I don't think I thought about 8-year-old me and 7-year-old me and 6-year-old me. But now that, you know, I'm alongside her as she grows, I am remembering. And it's so true. You just know that you can't just tell her. You need to be it. You need to be it. Not even show her. You have to be it, right? And that has been one of my greatest motivations for sure. Like, when you have the wobble or you feel a dip or you feel like, oh, this is hard, or I want to take the easy route, you just remember why you're doing it, you know?
That's right.
And so I really relate to that. And I also think it is so interesting what you said about turning 40 or in your 40s that it starts to happen. So Carl Jung has this famous quote about life starting at 40, because up until then you're just doing research, right?
Yes.
And I think that's so true. Like, you're getting to know yourself. You're like, and you can't, there's no other way but through the experiences, through the choices you make, through the, you know, seemingly wrong turns that land you in a place where you're like, oh, okay, now what?
He's my favorite psychologist, by the way.
Yeah.
And this is, as we're talking, so, you know, my daughter, because she knows mommy's working now. So
yeah.
I'm going, she rolled in a ball with a note on it. So I.
Well, my daughter's also in the next room and I'm shocked she hasn't interrupted. What does the note say?
Okay. It says, Mom, you know, I love you so here. Okay. Mom, you know, I love you so much and that I think you're amazing, but I really want to watch TV upstairs. Okay. The answer is yes. Okay. Okay. See,
oh my gosh. Getting, we already had a negotiating of watching TV before this call. So she's now in the room and I told you can't bother me.
See that? Oh gosh. Sorry, babe. See now. And I doubt she's mad because, you know, now it's about privacy and she's like, TMI. So the answer is yes, my love. I'll deal with her wrath later.
Yeah.
I'm in trouble.
Oh my gosh, it's too funny. Okay, Melissa, I want to ask you, because I think it's interesting to see what comes up for people when you ask this, but what lessons do you feel like you learned the hard way?
Love. That's probably been the biggest one that I learned the hard way. You know, and that's just deep psychological stuff, right? You know, a lot of us will tend to make the same mistakes over and over and over again until you get the lesson. Mm-hmm. That was definitely me. Mm-hmm. In trying to unpack that, you know, but a lot of that stuff you kind of have to just live through. You don't know where your vulnerable spots are, or sometimes you don't know where the spots are that you're kind of unevolved. Yes. Until you like living it. And then you go, oh, wow, that is not the place I want to be at right now. Why am I behaving like this? Why am I thinking like this? Why am I talking like this? That is the beautiful thing of life. I think before I used to beat myself up and be like, oh, I'm too smart to be with this kind of guy. And like, you know, who sticks around with a guy who cheats on her? And, you know, and until you live it and you learn it, you know, I learned that the hard way. That was really the hard way for sure. You know, but I will say, like, not to toot my own horn, my intuition has always been very, very strong in the sense that I can watch other people around me and I can learn a lot by just observing other people in some instances, but also being forgiving with myself. I've made mistakes. All of us do. We've all made mistakes. I used to really beat myself up over, you know, learning things the hard way, but realizing like, well, I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't do it like that, you know, and not judging myself for that.
Yeah.
And I realized that in judging myself so harshly for like, you know, making the same mistake over and over again, I actually realized that that's probably how I was looking at other people. It's probably how I was treating myself was probably very much the way that, you know, classic projection. That's probably what I was doing to others as well. And the softer I got with myself, I understood that I became softer with other people as well. So, you know, I would say hard lessons in love has been the one place where I've always had that vulnerability or that place where, oh, I got a lot to learn there, but I've put in the work. I'm a big fan of therapy, and I credit finding my husband to all the work that I did with one therapist in particular. He was so good, and I think I was such a case for him because he retired after me, and I was like, I'm going to try not to take that personally. After working with him for like a year and a half,
I'm exhausted, Melissa.
He's like, I'm going to go on a boat by myself around the world. I'm like, what? Did I do that? He's like, I'm going to be untouchable. I'm unreachable. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to try not to cry. What did I do to you? But anyway, you know, but listen, we all have our thing, right? We all have a thing. We all have a thing we have to learn. You know, yeah, for me, it's been love that's, you know, been the hardest lessons, but also I guess sometimes the most fun too.
Yeah, good point. Good point. I know. I think that I can very much relate to that. And I feel like I'm finally in a place, but it's like, it's true. You're working through your own things through these relationships, right? So it's like, that's why you're in it, because there's things that you need to work through yourself and learn about yourself. And as long as you commit to your own growth, you find your way through those things. And, you know, I think your marriage is such a perfect, beautiful example of that.
Yeah, I did okay. And again, my husband's fantastic.
Yes.
But I do know that I had to do a lot of work.
Yeah.
To get here.
Yes,
you know, I
you
don't.
Do. And you have to be committed to that work. I agree.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and it's daily, because I never want people to be like, you know, the belief that, you know, that your marriage is a destination. Like you get to bliss and it's happily ever after. I don't actually believe in happily ever after. I think we all are understanding how fairy tales failed us as women. Mm-hmm. We're trying to recover from the fairy tales that we were raised with. But I certainly know that it's worth the investment in yourself, because it doesn't just come through in the choices that you make. It's just your general happiness, whether it's in your parenting with your children, with your partner, with your friendships, with your own parents, with your coworkers. I just think that when you are finding answers and unlocking things in yourself, I think you are benefiting everywhere in your life, including in your, you know, romantic relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. You actually just said something about having a deep intuition that you've, you know, followed. And I would love to hear about a time where you made a decision purely on intuition. You know, maybe you didn't have all the information, you hadn't had a chance to like talk it over with all your girlfriends and do a full-on Google search, and but it was just like gut feeling, like intuition says this. Can you think of a time like that?
I've got two stories, one where I trusted my intuition and one when I didn't listen to it.
They're both equally important to hear.
Absolutely. And they're both career related, which I think for me has been the places where I've really had to make some decisions and trust my gut. I was still a young reporter. I had been working at City TV at the time, which was a big deal when you come from a smaller market in television, which is, you know, smaller towns and what have you. And I had been working in Barrie, and which was considered, I think, a smaller or medium market. But Toronto, in terms of Canadian media, of course, that's the mega. That's where you want to be. And that's where the movers and the shakers are. And you wanted to become a reporter, you know, in Toronto. So I remember finally somehow, I don't know how, I do remember how, but it was a blur when I was hired as a reporter for then City TV. And I was still really young in the newsroom, and I was probably one of the newest. And it was actually me and the now national news anchor for CTV, Omar Sachedina. We started on the same day, and we became fast friends because we were like these two baby reporters in the newsroom. And I'm still great friends with him because we came up in the business together. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, I've made it. Like, this is it. Right. You know, I've made it to the big time. This is where I've always wanted to be. My coworkers are people that I grew up watching and I respect and admire. And this is amazing. And then stuff started to happen in the media landscape. And there was a big fracture between a couple of big media conglomerates. And they were breaking apart. And I remember thinking where I was and where I could be, and what are the possible opportunities? I could either work my way up at this place where I've just dreamed of working at my whole life, or since I got into the business, or do I want to jump over to something that is new, untested, but you could be one of the first? In other words, starting something new, which at that time in your career is very, very risky, because you could, like, you don't know if that's going to survive, this new thing is going to survive or not. And I remember thinking, I don't know why, but I think I need to leave. I need to leave this place that I've wanted to be at forever. And for whatever reason, it's just like everything is pulling me here and there's no good reason for it. So I gave my notice, and on the other side, the other company, they had told me what their plans were and, you know, what they wanted to create. And I just was like, yeah, like that's it. And it just lit me up. And I was like, and I could be a trailblazer there, and I'd be one of the first people hired and like start something new. And I went to go give my notice, and my boss said to me, you are making the biggest mistake of your career. And this is someone super well respected in the industry for decades, right? Mm-hmm. And they said, you're making the biggest mistake of your career. You should really think about this. Like, this could be the beginning of the end for you. And you're just like, whoa. Okay. And I thought about it for one more day. And then I came back and I was like, nope, I'm still feeling pretty good about this. And thank you for all the opportunities and all that, but this is where I want to go. And the last words said to me leaving the office was, you will become nameless and faceless in this industry if you leave.
Wait.
And I said, I guess I'm willing to take the chance.
Yeah.
So that was no reason other than my intuition saying, you got to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. That channel went on to become CP24 that we know today. I launched the new CP24. I launched the morning show. I was the first reporter. I was the first news anchor, first morning show host. Within a year and a half of jumping over to the new company, I was handpicked to be the only local talent to go and co-host the Olympics in Vancouver. I mean, you know, my dad has a saying, when you're on the right path, all the angels and saints will help you. And my dad is not a religious man. So that means something coming from him. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about intuition and the idea of like, where, why is something pulling you? And sometimes you don't know. And in fact, it goes against all the data, but somehow you just know.
Yes.
That's when it worked really, really, it worked out real well for me. And I have nothing to say other than it was my intuition that made me do it. And, you know, and there was another opportunity in the business that my gut kept saying, don't do it. There was an opportunity offered to me. And I'm sure any other person in the industry would have loved to have gotten the email to be like, okay, we want you to do this thing.
Yeah.
And I just was like, ugh, no, like just ick, no. And I was pulled into the office and they just kept throwing more money at me and more this, and why you should do this. And I was just like, I'm really happy. Like, I'm so happy doing what I'm doing. I don't want this opportunity. It's just not where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
And you can only say no to your boss so many times before you think, oh my God, this is going to really hurt me.
Yeah.
So I took this opportunity and I just hated every minute of it. It was just not right. It was the right, not the right timing, not the right people, not the right thing for me. Great place. You know, all it was going to be great,
but it was
with or without me, to be honest. Yeah. And I'm like, you guys will be fine without me.
Yeah.
And I didn't last long. I paid a high price for that with my mental health, to be perfectly honest. And then I said, I got to go. And it was the best decision and such a relief the day that I said, I've got to go. And I realized, I knew from the beginning that this was not smart.
Yeah.
It was not the right choice for me. So, you know, there's definitely something to be said for intuition.
Oh my goodness. Those are two very powerful stories. And, you know, when we talk about our conditioning from childhood to now or in our early 40s, this is one of the things that we really lose that is so critical. And a woman's intuition is so powerful. And those two stories, you know, are demonstrate that. And when I think the reason I love asking this question is even for you to reflect on it, but then for women to hear where we can be led when we listen to our intuition, right? And that guidance that we're receiving versus feeling like we need to, you know, like I said, Google it, ask all our friends for feedback, you know, make the decision that way. And it's available to all of us.
It really is. It really is. And I think if we understood our own power, we'd be more bold in following our intuition more. There's a lot of fear because there are real consequences and repercussions for some women who don't follow a prescribed set of behaviors or do what they're supposed to do or whatever the heck that means. You know, I'm very lucky and very privileged in many ways to have had these opportunities and to have choices.
Yes.
A lot of women don't have a lot of choices. The idea of intuition can come in many forms, but certainly having the ability to choose, not every woman has the ability to choose. And I want to be really cognizant of that. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I hope that we all learn that we are so powerful. Once we make a decision and we stick to it, I don't care if everyone's calling me every name in the book. Mm-hmm. You're so stupid. Who would do that? What an idiot. You know, you might lose friends as a result of it, but you have to put your own head down on your pillow at night.
Yes.
And the one thing that I value almost more than anything else in this world is peace of mind.
Yes.
And there is such power in having peace of mind when I put my head down on my pillow at night. That's the only thing that matters to me at the end of the day.
Yeah. I love that so much. And peace of mind does really come from being true to ourselves, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. It's beautiful. Melissa, I wanted to ask you, what is coming up next for you? I mean, you already have a lot happening with the podcast and the show and, you know, all the other amazing opportunities that come your way as a reflection of those things. But what are you feeling excited about?
I'm just excited that I'm excited.
I'm with you. I'm right. I totally get it. I get what you're saying.
I think that perhaps I've always been an eternal optimist and that, you know, I've been lucky to create opportunities for myself. And I never have felt down or sad about things in my life or when chapters end and a new one begins. I do have this generally eternally happy, optimistic, joyful outlook on life. And I thank my parents for that and, you know, my great group of friends around me and my husband and all of those things. But I think it's also that kind of outlook on life, which is created by many things, by the way. But I think my generally positive outlook on life also allows me to keep finding positivity and for positivity to find me. You know, one thing that is the saddest thing for me is when I see people who are stuck in sort of a victim mentality, that, you know, there's not opportunities or things are taken from me or I don't have agency in my life. And I've never had that. And I hope that people who have that really realize that it's so cliche to say, but life is what you make it. And so when I look forward, I am as excited as I was when I was in my 20s, looking forward to my 20s. I'm as excited as I was in my 30s, looking forward to what was ahead. I was just as excited when I hit 40 and was like, oh my God, I'm just getting started. And I feel like I'm just getting started. The podcast has been a big catalyst to the next, you know, when you follow things that make you feel good, that are fulfilling,
yes,
that good thing begets the next good thing, begets the next good thing. Mm. And if you're not doing the thing that's fulfilling, how do you know that it's going to spawn the next good thing? And when I say that is, you know, I've been approached to turn my podcast into a television show. I have so many books in me. I don't have the time, but I have so many books in mm-hmm. me mm-hmm. that I would like to get out on paper at some point. My podcast has a very subtle yet clear activist undertone to it. When I see more and more talking to experts and doing my own research, where there's so much work to do,
yes,
and advocacy and activism to get stuff changed. I'll give you an example, you know, because the squeaky wheel gets the oil. So I'm starting to put this out in the world. But, you know, other than the province of Manitoba, there is no other province or territory that has a billing code for menopause care for any doctor who's practicing in Canada. And you hear that and you go,
how is this possible?
What?
Yeah.
When every single one of your female patients is going to go through, that's like saying, I'm a doctor, but I can't actually care for you through every single phase of your life, only up to a certain phase. Like, it doesn't sound right and it's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when I hear things like this, there's a lot of stuff that I've accumulated over all of my episodes with amazing doctors in particular. Sure. And I just go, ooh, I could make a bit of noise about that. Ooh, I could make a bit of noise about that. And, you know, you have to use your platform responsibly. And I've built this platform to not only educate, but to empower. And to me, part of being empowered myself is to not just talk, it's to actually have things happen. So, you know, is there a side of me that's, I've always had an activist Mel in me, but, you know, to lean that direction and maybe lean in there. Is there a run for public office in me? Not going to say no. You know, is there more teaching in my future, but in a very different capacity? Yes. You know, like I just get excited because
this is such
I want to do it all.
Yes. I love it, Melissa. This is such a good message for my listeners because they are mostly in our age range, right? You know, younger and older, but in our age range, is that we can move through this phase and we can manage all these things and we can be excited, right? And we can be excited because we've done all the research. We've done all the decades of research. We are creators. We created our life. We created all the wonderful things in our life and we can keep creating. Nothing is stopping us from creating. And so I love that. I love it. It's the perfect way to close out our chat today. Although I could keep going. There's so many more threads I want to pull.
Part two.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have to do that another time. But I wanted to ask you the final question that I ask all guests. So this podcast is called Be All You Are. And I wanted to ask you, what does it mean to you to be all you are?
For me to be all I am is to leave no gifts untouched, to literally be able to identify the things that you know you're good at, that you love, that is not just for you, that it is a gift to others. And when I say a gift to others, it's to be able to help. You know, the one thing I've learned in my podcast is aging powerfully. I actually think that the pursuit of mental and physical well-being and aging powerfully is not actually ultimately for us. I think when you are strong mentally, and when you are strong physically, and when you are aging empowered and powerfully, it means you are at your best self to help somebody else who isn't there. Right? And to me, it's like, what a selfish thing that we were able to achieve something as grand as a dream and not think that we have to then give that gift, help, reach out and use whatever power we have, small or large, to help somebody else. I just think, like, if you just think of, like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? And he does all that work with his muscles, and he's huge, and he was so huge in the bodybuilding world, and just to look great. And it's like, what if that body and that mind was like physically helping other people and building homes and, you know, saving people. And, you know, it's where the superhero or the heroine, the super heroine, that's where those archetypes come from.
Yes.
It's not just that we want to be strong because we want to be strong in that status.
Yes.
I don't care about status.
Mm-hmm.
I care about impact. And so to me, impact is you have done something, you've achieved something, you've learned something, you've come through something, you've achieved a new wisdom, you've had an epiphany, you've made a huge discovery in science, you're a doctor, you're a researcher, you're a scientist, you're a teacher. I don't care what you do, small or large, but when you are lucky to achieve something, you cannot keep that to yourself. You just can't. The whole reason why I want to be around is not just because I want to look great in a miniskirt and that's why I work out. It's because I want to be here to see my daughter to as long as possible so that I can help her with her family, be here as a mentor to her, help other young women, help women my age, share, get more knowledge, share some more. So, you know, it's not a selfish act. When you ask be all you are, it's figure out your gifts, not only for your own happiness, because by the way, everybody will benefit around you when you're happy. It's so that I can help you get to the next level the same way somebody probably helped me get to here. So that's what that means to me.
That is beautiful, Melissa. Thank you. That is the perfect way to close out our conversation. And I'm so grateful that you took the time to join me today. And I know all my listeners are going to love this episode and be sharing it like crazy and be taking notes. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. And women, you are as strong as you believe you are. It doesn't matter what you're doing, what your job is, what your title is, how much money you have. We are so powerful. So just know that, live it, and share it.
Beautiful. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to today's show. I hope you found inspiration and use this podcast to start stepping into all you are. You can find information that was shared in today's show just below in the show notes. If you love this conversation, please share it with others so they can benefit from it too. You can take a screenshot of this episode and tag me on Instagram or share a link via text or email to a friend. Let's be clear, we need more women stepping into all they are. So go ahead and share away. And of course, subscribe to the podcast so that you receive the latest episodes every week, and take a quick moment to rate it and leave a review. Thank you so much. Until next time, remember to keep exploring what it means to be all you are.